taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, American Journal, with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. Rothmus on X. Here's the official story so far. A random 20-year-old acting completely alone walked within 150 yards of a presidential campaign rally with a rifle, climbed up onto a roof in full view of Secret Service snipers, set up his shot, and fired without anybody intervening and no help from anybody. This 20-year-old is also is so politically radical as to attempt an assassination, yet not radical enough to have ever posted any political writings or commentary on any social media site ever in his life. He also wrote no manifesto, left behind no indication as to why he did it. His last and only political act before attempting to kill the Republican candidate was to register as a Republican. You must believe this and ask no questions or else you are a conspiracy theorist. And one thing we know about assassination attempt is that there's never any conspiring involved. Ever, right? Well, I'm not sure anybody actually believes that, even the people involved. Some other stuff that we've learned, although I don't know how confirmed any of this is. So I'll just tell you what people are reporting. Suleiman Ahmed posted a image that appears to show Thomas Matthew Crooks spent nearly $1,500 on OnlyFans over 5 months. I got some questions about this. In that, do people really use all their full names, all three full names on OnlyFans? Like when you sign up for OnlyFans, do you put your first, middle, and last name? I don't know. That's a little odd to me, though. If this is real, Thomas Matthew Crooks has the American flag in his bio, which is bizarre. He was a bully loner. Mario Nawfal reports the shooter in the Trump assassination attempt did have mental disorders. The FBI and Secret Service briefed lawmakers on the Trump assassination attempt, revealing that the 20-year-old shooter had a diagnosed major depressive disorder. Secret Service Director Cheadle acknowledged agency mistakes, while FBI Director Abate stated no political or ideological motives were found at the shooter's home. FBI Director Wray reported over 200 interviews conducted, promising a thorough investigation. This information suggests mental health may have played a role in the attack, with political motives remaining unclear. And of course, it was not long after the assassination attempt that the topic of SSRIs was brought up by me, because obviously these things almost always include somebody on SSRIs, always somebody whose brain chemistry has been altered by those mysterious and dangerous substances. Now, the timeline so far is this, although I think, you know, there's more information about that. You know, now there's information saying that he was spotted 3 hours before the event, but officially and in the time frame around the shooting, at 5:10, Crooks was first identified as a person of interest. At 5:30 p.m., Crooks was spotted with that rangefinder. 5:52, Crooks was spotted on the roof by Secret Service. At 6:02, Trump took the stage. And at 6:12, Crooks fired the first shots. So it was a full hour of activity before the shots actually rang out. Again, we can get into the exact timeline here in just a second. Fox has learned from senators that were told in an all-member briefing today that Thomas Crooks wrote on a gaming platform called Steam, "July 13th will be my premiere. Watch as it unfolds." When investigators reviewed the laptop, they found a few searches in July of Trump, Biden, when is DNC convention, and July 13th Trump rally. Investigators have found no evidence of a particular ideology, which the FBI believes is notable, and nobody in interviews reported Crooks discussing politics. Suspect has two cell phones, primary phone recovered from the scene along with a remote transmitter detonator. Secondary cell phone was found at the home. It only had 27 contacts, and the FBI is in the process of tracking down and interviewing those people. And of course, Philip Anderson responds to this. The FBI should not be allowed to investigate this. They lie and cover things up like they always do. I think that is most informed people's view on this. And then, of course, the explosives are the real piece of evidence to me. Where did he get them? How did he know how to build them?
It's been sold out for a while. It is pure deep earth crystal iodine. It's so hard to make. You've got to have DEA approved labs to do it. And it takes months and months to break it down in this special patented process. Nobody else has true nascent iodine. They put it on the label, but it's still bound to other elements and it's not fully absorbable by the cells. It's the missing link. Even the UN estimates 2+ billion people have cognitive disabilities because of iodine deficiency. Up until the 30s, we had major IQ reduction because of lack of iodine in the U.S. food supply, especially in the U.S. Midwest. From the 30s to the early 80s, the government put crappy iodine in the salt by law. And IQs went up 15 points on average. Burnt effects went way down. Then in the early 80s, they took it out again. This is the deep earth crystal, pure, meaning atomic, on the atomic table. And it goes into the cells at a cellular level. Survival Shield X2, now available 25% off. InfoWarsStore.com. 5-star review or call toll-free 888-253-3139.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest today is Ed Tarpley. He's a criminal defense attorney in Alexandria, Louisiana, who served as district attorney for the 35th Judicial District, Grant Parish, and was a delegate to the 2016 Republican National Convention. He joins us now from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. You can find him on X at Ed Tarpley, and his website is edtarpley.com. He's also the lawyer representing Stuart Rhodes and others in their persecution by the U.S. federal government. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Tarpley.
Harrison, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, very good to talk to you, and I'm very interested in talking to you because there's been some incredible information that's come out recently about the way that the prosecution lied, deceived, or, and these are my words, misled the jurors in the case of the Oath Keepers and Stuart Rhodes. Can you tell us a little bit about what's been revealed and what impact this might have on the case?
Well, one of the biggest things that happened is the work that our client, Steve Baker, has done. He is currently being the lawyers. And so he has spent hours, I guess probably hundreds of hours, going through video in D.C. He was one of the first people that was allowed to review the video. And he was able to determine that the testimony from Harry Dunn and Officer Lazarus with the U.S. Capitol Police was false, that these people said that they were in a place and heard certain statements, when actually that could not have happened because at the time they claimed to have witnessed what they did, they were in different places. Indication that some important testimony in the first Oath Keeper trial was absolutely totally false. And so it calls into question, you know, the statements of Officer Harry Dunn and Officer Lazarus and other statements that they've made. So that is one aspect of new information that's come out. And there have been a couple of other things, too. So as the time has gone on since the first Oath Keeper trial, which took place in September, October, November 2022, we have found other video evidence that the defense did not have at trial. And so, you know, these are very important developments, as you may know. And it's something that, you know, we're looking at in terms of how we will use this in the future. But we can talk more about that in the next segment. It's just that we've got we're still collecting up information. And there has been information that has come to light that indicates that there was evidence that the defense did not have at the first Oath Keeper trial.
Now, would that be evidence that the prosecutors did have? I mean, would this be a Brady violation issue?
Well, I think certainly we would consider it a Brady violation issue. I mean, the government was responsible for turning over any exculpatory evidence, and this is what that would be considered. So, yes, we would consider it that. We filed a number of continuances. I say we. I mean, look, there were five defendants in the first trial, and there were eight lawyers. So I'm speaking kind of collectively here.
Right.
That you know, different lawyers filed motions for continuance in that first trial. And, you know, the lawyers, everyone agreed that we needed more time, that the evidence was just so massive, the amount of evidence, the phone calls, the videos, it just, you know, it was, you know, there were thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence to be reviewed. And frankly, we made that argument to the court a number of times, and there were some continuances granted early on, but long toward the summer of 2022, the judge in that case was pretty committed to a trial beginning in September. And that's what happened. So the last continuances filed were denied, and we went forward with the trial in September. Well, in hindsight, it would have been much better if we had had another 6 months to prepare, and maybe we would have been able to identify these videos that would have been very helpful in the trial. But we did not. And so I'm grateful to Steve Baker for the work that he's done and for the event, the evidence he's identified. I know that Joe Hanneman with Epic News, I think, has Epic Times has broken the story on a couple of these videos, and others have been out there. I think Blaze Media has done the same, because Steve Baker works for Blaze Media now. And so he's done a lot of commentary and a lot of reporting on the issue of evidence that we did not have in the first Oathkeepers trial.
And of course, he was almost immediately arrested. Steve Baker, journalist, was arrested almost immediately after making some of this information public. And the thing I think people need to understand about this information is it doesn't just cast doubt onto the government's case. It completely obliterates it. I mean, it's exculpatory evidence, right? This video shows that the testimony that was used, and it was some of the primary, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, the testimony from Harry Dunn and Lazarus, or what they claim to have seen and been involved in their interactions with the Oath Keepers, that was central to the government's case, and yet it was proven to have never happened. I mean, it was proven beyond any doubt that when these guys testified, I was here and he was here and the Oath Keepers were here and we were, you know, having conversation. In reality, the one guy was 10 minutes away. The other guy, the Oath Keepers had already left. I mean, the timeline didn't make sense. It proves that testimony was perjury, essentially. And again, these are my words, and I don't want to make any, you know, I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. But am I wrong? I mean, this seemed like it was the type of thing where as soon as this was revealed, as soon as this evidence was put forward, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand the legal system. It seemed like there should have been some sort of emergency measure to go, all right, we need to vacate this conviction because this proves that the people with that perjury happened, that the testimony was incorrect or falsified. I mean, how is it that this information comes out proving their case was utterly false, and yet it's been months and nothing has been done?
Well, as you know, the case involved numerous allegations, and allegations of seditious conspiracy, the allegations of violating 18 U.S.C. 1512C2, which is the obstruction of an official proceeding charge. All five defendants were convicted of obstruction of an official proceeding. And of course, you know, that's the charge that was reversed by the Fisher case. And
right.
I filed an amicus brief in the Fisher case for the former Feds Group Freedom Foundation, arguing that the use of the statute was improper, that they had expanded the reach of the statute beyond what it was intended for. And, we're really grateful that the Supreme Court agreed with our position and the position of many of the other amicus filers, that this misapplication of the statute was wrong. And Chief Justice John Roberts wrote a great opinion saying that the novel interpretation of the Department of Justice would have exposed activists and lobbyists and other people to possible prosecution for influencing an official proceeding. And that would be lobbying a legislature or county commission, or protesting some sort of a political event outside of a building or location. And so what they did with the misapplication of 1512C2, I think, is really just an indicator of what they did in other aspects of the case. that the Department of Justice was, you know, creating this false narrative that there was an insurrection. We know there was not an insurrection, that we had permitted demonstrations, permitted protests legitimately occurring that day, and not just at the Ellipse, but and other places around the Capitol. And it got out of hand. I mean, there was a riot that took place, but there was no insurrection. There was never an insurrection. There was no plan for an insurrection. And, you know, Harrison, throughout the entire Oath Keeper trial, which lasted almost 2.5 months, there was not a single FBI agent that ever testified that there was a plan to enter the Capitol, that Stuart Rhodes was involved in planning an attack on the Capitol. And why is that? Because it was totally false. It was a false accusation. It was a false charge. And so everything that has come out since then just supports the fact that the Department of Justice created a false narrative, and they used the Oath Keepers as a scapegoat, and they used the statutes in the U.S. Code to crush them, and the use of 18 U.S.C. 1512 C2 was a way for them to do that because it carried a 20-year jail sentence. And as you know, our client, Stuart Rhodes, received 18 years in federal prison. So bottom line is the DOJ went out of their way to vilify and demonize our clients, the five Oath Keepers, the five individuals on trial, and they were successful. They got convictions of everybody. They didn't win all of their charges. They weren't successful in all of the charges that they filed, but of course they were successful in enough charges, and our client Stuart Rhodes received 18 years in prison.
Yeah, they were successful enough to put an innocent man away for nearly two decades. So I guess
that's exactly right.
I can put that trophy on their mantle. And to me, the phrase that stands out from the whole trial was, quote, unspoken conspiracy. And how that to me is just, I mean, it's an oxymoron, right? I mean, the idea behind conspiracy is that, well, you might have a murder and this guy didn't actually participate in the murder, but he ordered it. So, you know, it was conspiring. So he's guilty of the crime, even though he wasn't there and wasn't physically involved. It was his. So the idea is that there's communication, that you inspire somebody to do something, you pay somebody to do something, you conspire with somebody. How can you have a conspiracy if you never talk about it? How can you have an unspoken conspiracy? I mean, that, I think that phrase alone sort of shows how far they were willing to stretch the bounds of law to get this conviction.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I think if you look at what the DOJ did, their conduct was reprehensible. They concocted a story about an insurrection, a seditious conspiracy. There was no seditious conspiracy. All we had is, you know, working class people, middle class people that were expressing their First Amendment freedom, freedom of speech, freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances, freedom to assemble in public. Certainly, we don't condone violence. We don't condone anybody that went into the Capitol. Like Stuart Rhodes said, after the ones that went into the Capitol returned to him on the in front of the Capitol, on the pavement there in front of the Capitol, and they said he had gone inside the Capitol. He said, "Well, that was a stupid thing to do. You shouldn't have done that." And that's exactly right. No one should have gone to the Capitol. But the point is, what they've done is they took what happened and they created this myth of an insurrection out of it. They created this false narrative. And so they picked out the Oath Keepers and also the Proud Boys. And I wasn't involved in the Proud Boy case, but they picked out both of these groups as high profile groups that they could tar and feather and demonize and smear with the allegations that they were the leaders of the insurrection, that in the opening statement, the government basically referred to the Oath Keepers as like the vanguard of the attack on the Capitol. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. That simply did not happen. I know you followed this case very closely, Harrison, and the Oath Keepers had never been engaged in any violent acts in all the years of their history. They always were there to keep the peace, to protect people that attended Trump rallies and other political events. I mean, they worked doing disaster relief in Houston after the big hurricane, Hurricane Harvey. And, you know, they were always there to help people. And what the DOJ did is they simply demonized and smeared them and then falsely made them the centerpiece of the attack on the Capitol. And it just simply wasn't true. But they were able to put together the evidence. They were able to cherry pick statements from different chats and things that Stewart has said at the rallies and on the internet. And they used that against him. And so I've always said that it wasn't Stuart Rhodes' actions that convicted him. It was his words, that the DOJ used his words against him. And, you know, we live in a country where the freedom of speech is protected. And, you know, you may say some outrageous things. You may say some things that are offensive that people don't like, but those are still protected words. That's still protected speech. And they should not have used the words that Stuart Rhodes spoke in the public and on the internet and through other means. They should not have used that to convict him of seditious conspiracy and send him to prison. But that's exactly what they did. Now, you know, the thing with Harry Dunn and Officer Lazarus, I mean, that wasn't directly connected with Stuart Rhodes, but it was a part of the trial. It was a part of the trial, and it was something that the jury was able to consider. And so if you think about the fact, if you look at the totality of evidence going to the trial, then that evidence affected all of the defendants, okay? And it was, we now know that it was false testimony. And yes, we believe that this is something that, you know, we should bring up at some point, and it will be brought up. I know that all the lawyers know about this, and we're aware of these videos and tapes that we did not receive in evidence. But bottom line is, what the Department of Justice did was reprehensible. They concocted a false story of an insurrection. We know that an insurrection did not take place. And guess what? There were no plans for an insurrection to take place or for anyone to go into the Capitol. And no FBI agent ever testified on the witness stand that there was a plan for Stuart Rhodes or anyone else to go into the Capitol.
Even though that is essentially what he was convicted of. And you know, not only did they not present evidence that, you know, there was a plan to go into the Capitol or cause violence, as I understand it, it was the exact opposite, in that the reality of the situation with Harry Dunn was that the Oath Keepers were standing in front of him, protecting him from, you know, angry and potentially violent elements of the crowd that the Oath Keepers were not associated with. So literally,
that's
the opposite.
Exactly right.
Yeah, so they portrayed
no,
as
no, you're
the Oath
exactly
Keepers attacking.
Right. I think that the testimony was, and the video evidence showed that Kelly Meggs and Kenneth Harrelson and some of the others had formed a barrier between Harry Dunn and some of the protesters that were inside the Capitol inside the rotunda, and we did have that video, and we did show that video was shown in the trial, but Harry Dunn he testified, as I recall, that they weren't really protecting him, and he didn't want them there, and they didn't do anything to help him or anything like that. And that's just not true. I mean, you know, I know, because, you know, I know what the client said, and we know that that was a time in which they acted to protect the police and protect Harry Dunn because they, you know, they just wanted, you know, order to be put in place there. And, you know, they went outside the Capitol after just being inside for a few minutes. So in any event, yes, Harry Dunn put a completely different spin on what really happened. And I think Steve Baker pointed out that his book was false in many, many areas, that he made lots of statements that were simply flat out lies. And you'll have to go to Blaze Media to check all that out. But Steve has written several stories about Harry Dunn and the things that he said that were false and the things that he wrote in his book that were false. And I think he testified before the January 6th committee, and Steve Baker has looked at all the errors and statements that he made there that were not true.
And then, of course, Lazarus is involved in this, and he was the head of security directly under Nancy Pelosi. So there is, you know, when you talk about conspiracy, there seems to be, you know, more smoke here than in the communications with the Oath Keepers. But regardless, so you've got the video testimony, or you've got the video that contradicts the testimony. You've got more videos. Steve Baker's reporting. You've got the Supreme Court decision, you know, potentially vacating convictions over obstruction of justice, as they totally stretched and warped that definition or to fit, you know, what they wanted here. I mean, this, knock on wood, well, but I mean, it's got to be overturned, right? I mean, there's so much evidence that this trial was fraudulent. There's no way they can keep Stuart Rhodes in jail after all this has come out, right? I mean, what's the prognosis here?
Well, let me just say the Fisher case had to do with the misapplication of this statute, 18 U.S.C. 1512C2. 1512C1, and it's a little complicated to understand, and I know that probably a lot of people in the public have kind of, you know, found this confusing, and it is confusing. 1512C1 deals with the spoliation of evidence, with the tampering with evidence, destroying papers and books and documents and that sort of thing. 1512C2 says that it's a violation of the law to corruptly impede, obstruct, or influence an official proceeding. Well, that follows on to 1512C1, and C1 deals with evidence, and it describes the different types of evidence that it's against the law to tamper with or destroy it. And so those two paragraphs of that statute should be read together, and that's what the Supreme Court ruled. They said that 1512C2 is not a provision that stands on its own, that we can't go out and Deborah, I've lost it.
I hear you. We lost the video, but we still have your audio. Yeah. So, and this was originally written, you know, to deal with like Enron and some of these big financial companies that, you know, were suspected of burning financial records. You know,
there we are. We're back. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, Harrison, you're absolutely right. That's what was going on there. And so what they did is they misapplied that to say that, well, what the protesters did that day, obstructing an official proceeding, which was obstructing Congress from counting the electoral votes. Well, we know that's not what happened. And so what the Supreme Court said was essentially what we argued in our amicus brief, that the expansion of the reach of this statute was unconstitutional, that this was beyond what the statute was designed for. And it would, if the interpretation of the DOJ was followed, and this is what Chief Justice John Roberts said, he said, if you do what the DOJ is, you know, claiming is the right way to interpret the statute, this would affect all kinds of prosaic activity, which means just normal everyday activity that would include activists and lobbyists and other people that are trying to influence an official proceeding. I mean, that means you could be prosecuted for, you know, going to Congress to lobby your congressman or to show up at a county commission to demonstrate against a resolution at the county level. In other words, it would have far-reaching effect. It would expand that law to encompass all types of protected First Amendment activity. Right. Because guess what, Harrison? The First Amendment says we have a constitutional right to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Yep.
That's what we have.
And they've completely warped it. And we know they went after the Oath Keepers, they said, in a shock and awe campaign to crush dissent. It's incredible stuff. Very sad. I hope you're successful. Stay with us for a second, Ed. We'll say goodbye on the other side. I do want to tell you about InfoWars MD. Discover the newest line of supplements from InfoWars designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being, available exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulas cater to diverse needs. We have ageless vitality collagen, superfood greens, mushroom max, turmeric 95, better mood plus, libido RX, CBD, full spectrum 10 and 25 milligram gummies, as well as so much more. The premium InfoWars Life line. It's InfoWars MD, and it's available now 25% off at InfoWarsStore.com. I suggest the collagen, and just search it yourself. I'm not going to make any medical claims here, but search the importance of collagen in the aging process and see why taking collagen as a supplement can be perhaps the most powerful thing you do to reverse the signs of aging.
I haven't had a gold sponsor in 10 or 11 years. Not that gold and silver isn't a great thing to get, but because the industry is so corrupt and horrible. Anything good is going to have bad people. Like, America's been great and amazing, so evil people came here to take it over. It's the same paradox. Bad times make strong men. Strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make bad times. It's a paradox of success creates decadence. So I had a good gold company. It's been my sponsor going back 28 years ago. They shut down because all the regulations and control, because they weren't making enough money, charging a fair rate. Had been a gold sponsor in 11 years. So then I'm looking around. I already want this guy on as a guest. He already has the biggest silver operation in the country, one of the biggest gold, 25 years in business, Kirk Elliott. He always comes on, barely doesn't even plug his products. And so I go, hey, I need a sponsor. I want you on as a guest. He says, hey, I've been trying to contact you. You want to be a sponsor? So he's been on with us for 8 months. He's giving you great advice. And silver's gone up and gold's gone up massively since he came on. All his predictions have basically beyond come true. It's been worse than what he said. He's been very conservative. So it's like overly came true. Tomorrow's news today.
InfoWars. Tomorrow's news today.
This is a no-brainer. Everybody needs to get into silver and gold. The problem is there's so many sharks and so many scammers playing on the public's ignorance. You guys have the highest rating. I'm endorsing you. Your consultants, you pay 8% for your consultancy and then nothing back to sell. That's incredibly valuable. That's where they get you. Everybody should call the number. They should email you, say Alex Jones sent you because you're a great sponsor. We get the support for the InfoWar, and they should do it. Everyone needs silver and gold, whether it's 10 silver bars or 100 silver bars or one gold bar or 50 gold bars. People need to get into this because this is what the elites are doing. It's so simple. KEPM.com/gold. KirkElliottPreciousMetals.com/gold. Go to that link. It gives the show support. Get the best deals. Call 720-605-3900. Tell them Alex Jones sent you. And to me, I only promote something that is an absolute no-brainer.
Lie to you about what's happening now. InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. InfoWars.com/go.
One of the things I learned that shocked me was that the government was putting fluoride in our water. Not to mention all the other chemicals and food and water that cause health problems and thyroid issues. And I figured, what is the solution? Nascent iodine kept coming up in research. We decided here at InfoWars to bring you the purest form of nascent iodine. Survival Shield X3 can help support your thyroid and help with a healthy metabolism. Survival Shield X3, back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. My guest is Ed Tarpley. He was only supposed to be with us for 30 minutes, but I asked him to stay a little bit longer so we could finish up these final thoughts. We got cut off by the commercial break there. You can follow Mr. Tarpley on X at Ed Tarpley and his website, edtarpley.com. He is... He represents Stuart Rhodes and some of the Oath Keepers in their thoroughly convoluted trial, let's just say. And we've just been running through some of the exculpatory evidence that has come to light ever since the conviction. And I just want to finish up by asking this, Mr. Tarpley. You're there at the RNC. I've been watching all the speeches. I haven't heard a lot about the political persecution of the J6 prisoners. Is that a big topic at the RNC? And is it as big of a topic as it deserves to be? I mean, how much is the plight of the January 6th victims of persecution being discussed there in the Republican Party?
Well, let me tell you what. Up until Peter Navarro appeared last night, there hadn't been anything said about political persecution in quite the way that Peter Navarro did last night, and he talked about the political persecution of himself and Steve Bannon. There has been a lot of talk about President Trump's political persecution, about the lawfare has been directed toward him. So that has been a constant theme about the persecution of Donald Trump. There hasn't been much said about the January 6th defendants. I'm a little disappointed in that. But let me tell you what, if you talk to the delegates, it's a totally different story. I mean, the delegates are on top of what happened on January 6th, and they're concerned about it. And everyone that I have talked to, and I've talked to people from many different states, people are outraged at what happened with the prosecution of the January 6th defendants. And I've talked about the Fisher case with a lot of people and how that was a great victory for us 3 weeks ago, how that'll have a direct impact on over 350 people that were convicted of 1512C2. So among the delegates, the concern about what happened on January 6th is very important. And look, I did have a lengthy conversation with a congressman yesterday from Texas that is on one of the oversight committees, and they're very concerned about the fact that the Department of Justice misapplied this statute, 1512C2, that they wrongfully prosecuted people with this law, and the Supreme Court has knocked them back down and rebuked them for what they did. So the question about why did the Department of Justice use a law that clearly should not have been applied the way they did? Why did they do that? Why did they go out of their way to prosecute people with this? Well, I think I know the answer. The answer is it was a way that they could pack on a felony conviction. It carried a 20-year sentence with it. They could expand the harsh jail time that they've tried to impose on many, many defendants. And I think that's why they did it. But in any event, we'll see. Hopefully the DOJ will be questioned about this at some point, because we need to hold accountable the people in the Department of Justice that have done what they've done to the January 6th defendants. They've treated them unfairly. They've sought to imprison them and with harsh jail sentences, which was completely unjustified and unwarranted. So, and it certainly was in the case of our defendants. It certainly was in the case of Stuart Rose. So, by the way, one thing I will say, that all five defendants in the first Oath Keeper trial were convicted of 1512C2, the very law of the, that the Supreme Court said that the federal government, the DOJ, should not have used against them. So that's a great victory for all of the January 6th defendants, and it's a great victory for Stuart Rose. So it's one of his felony convictions that now is a kick to the curb. And so that remains the seditious conspiracy charge and the tampering with evidence charge that will still be on appeal for Stewart. But I think that here at the convention, people are concerned about what has happened to the January 6th defendants, even though there hasn't been a lot said from the platform, from the podium. The rank and file delegates here are very concerned about it.
Well, that's very good to hear. And obviously, they have our prayers. I mean, this should be one of the overriding concerns of the people who, you know, want to represent us as Republicans right now. Patriots who never did anything wrong, never hurt anybody, and are, in my opinion, totally innocent of the charges for which they've been convicted, are rotting in prison for decades. And that is a injustice that we as Americans cannot stand for. And I'm so glad that the Oath Keepers and Stuart and everybody else has people like yourself standing up for them and fighting for them. And I just look forward to the day where hopefully justice will be done and Stuart Rhodes will be a free man again. Ed Tarpley, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, you can follow Ed on X at Ed Tarpley, his website, edtarpley.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Tarpley.
Thank you. Thank you for Harrison for having me on. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And wow. Yeah. Incredible stuff. And again, I mean, this really is like, it should be the main topic of discussion. After all, we know why they targeted the Oath Keepers. Shock and awe. They said it. They said, we're going after the people with big profiles. We're going after the big thought leaders, the big protest leaders, the big, you know, organizers on the right wing, as a psychological operation to set an example for everybody else. You think you can organize against us? Well, we'll tack on terrorism charges and you'll be sitting in jail for 20 years. If they get away with that, it really is the end of the First Amendment. And we've been asking the question here, you know, what happens when they steal the election again? What happens when the same thing occurs? What happens when they shut down the vote counts and send all the observers home at 10:30 only to have a tranche of votes come in, you know, 100,000 votes for Joe Biden, zero for Donald Trump at midnight, and they steal it right in front of all of us again? What are we going to do? Protest? Well, we saw how that worked out last time. Most people won't even, you know, want to risk it. they have us in a situation where if they cheat in the election blatantly, obviously, provably, well, the vast majority of Americans will sit quietly and stew. They'll still sit quietly and fume to themselves about what an injustice this is, but very little will be done. So if this isn't reversed, I mean, that's it. That's it for America. And it's I can only hope that the evil of the deep state, as I know it can get sort of like depersonalized when you have institutions doing this, but just look at it on a human level. I mean, what they're doing to these guys, if it was an individual doing it, you'd call him a serial killer, right? You'd call him a, I don't know, I mean, just they're it would be one of these legendary serial killer murderers. Like, they've taken a man who did nothing wrong, hurt nobody. Yeah, John Wayne Gacy Jr. That's how our government is acting. And just because they do it in robes, just because they're wearing robes while they do it, doesn't mean it's any more legitimate. And you can just imagine if, you know, it's just horrible. It's just horrible what they've done to these guys. And I can only hope that in their evil and desperation to get these convictions, carry out this psyop on the American people, to put us in a state of fear, to censor ourselves. And that's the ultimate goal of theirs, right? Is they'd rather not have to go through any of this. They'd rather not even have the protest happen because everybody just stays home because they're too scared to go protest anyway. That'd be convenient. They don't have to do anything then. They just sit back and commit crimes and we, you know, quietly accept it because we know that if we go and stand up against them, they'll come after us with everything they've got and they'll warp laws and manipulate and distort the rules in order to convict us. So that's their ultimate goal. And we can only hope that in their desperation, they have so overwrought and overstretched the actual statutes that they're using that it will all be reversed and it will all come crashing down on them. Because clearly they targeted people for a political reason. They have targeted Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers specifically and explicitly by their own words because of their political beliefs and because of their stances. And of course, they've had knives out for Stuart Rhodes ever since he first came to prominence when he wrote an article called something like 10 Orders You Should Not Follow, telling the American servicemen that you are responsible for your own actions. And even if you're ordered to do something that's illegal or unconstitutional, you have an obligation to not follow those orders. They really don't want people in uniform knowing that. They want people thinking you have to follow orders because they're planning on giving some orders that most people are not going to want to follow. Crazy stuff. We'll cover the assassination more on the other side.
This is a make it or break it moment, so I need people to connect those synapses in their brain for you to make a decision. If you don't support InfoWars, we will be shut down. And people say, well, they're constantly trying to shut you down. How are you still in the air? God. But God works through people. So we're in a paradox here where the judge says we're open for 3 more months. If we're able to get a buyer under the law, they won't be able to shut us down. I'll just work for somebody else. And that's coming. That's got to be set up. But in the meantime, if people believe the news that we're being shut down everywhere, which they tried to do and failed, by that foregone conclusion, we're shut down. And under the last federal bankruptcy manager who would not reorder product and killed all our advertising, who was positioning us to be shut down and tried to shut us down, we caught him. The judge caught him and fired him. We're almost sold out of all the products. All right? But we have a lot of great products that are still in stock, limited supplies. So I need you to go to InfoWarsStore.com. And we just had a donation button. Maybe we should just do that. You're fighting for freedom in a key election, battling the globalists. We need support. But we want a long-term relationship with you. We want to be symbiotic. We want you to get great products you like, get them delivered to you quickly, and enjoy them and have them empower you and make your life better so you love them and you keep getting them. We want a relationship. So there's the InfoWars MD line that I don't talk about enough that is all the highest quality, whether it's turmeric or whether it's natural sleep aid or whether it's saw palmetto, other compounds that are great for your prostate, also great for women's breasts. It affects the same type of tissues that have those hormonal fluctuations. I'm not a doctor, but I read the literature. You need to go to InfoWarsStore.com and go to the sections that have the whole line, over a dozen products, InfoWars MD. We've got Ashwagandha Gummy. Relaxes you, makes you feel really relaxed with no downer feeling. Amazing. An incredible product. Good Night Sleep. We have a lot of great sleep aids. This one's excellent. They're all different formulas. People love it. Good Night Sleep. InfoWars MD. Ashwagandha with black pepper, which relaxes you and makes you lose weight. These are all concentrates. Joint Relief Max works really well. Great pain relief. Huge bottle of it. You know, jam-packed. It's there. Joint Relief Max. InfoWars MD. Prostate Support. Already mentioned that. This is just a top formula. Super high quality. Organic. Nerve Renew. Amazing. To get your nerves, not to kill pain, but to get your nerves healthy. Nitric Boost. Vitamin Refusion about to sell out. About to sell out. Real Red Pill Plus. And something I never talk about and should talk about more, Probiotic Fiber. A super high-end product at a low price at InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you all for your support.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
All right, welcome back. Back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to get back into some of the things revealed about the assassination attempt and how it appears at this point the government is in a open cover-up. They're refusing to cooperate with congressional investigations that have been launched about the Secret Service failures that have taken place here. Suffice it to say, anybody with knowledge of governmental operations cannot look at this assassination attempt without seeing red flags absolutely everywhere. The shooter fits the profile of somebody who is often co-opted into these governmental false flag operations. And it's happened over and over and over again. Usually, it ends with the FBI arresting their patsy and then claiming victory and having foiled a terror plot that they themselves hatched and orchestrated. The Whitmer kidnapping case comes to mind. But there have been many others. And one possibility here, in sort of the best possible outcome for them, for the deep state, that is, would be that this shooter was being recruited by them, was being used as a patsy for them, either to try to get him to kill Trump, because that's what they want, and clearly they've been desirous of that for a very long time. And they wanted to do it with a degree of separation, get a patsy to do it. Or maybe he was being strung along, was being given fake or real explosives as part of a plot to plant them somewhere to assassinate Trump, but with the intention the whole time of the FBI swooping in at the last moment to stop the assassination and save the day, only for this patsy to sort of go rogue. Decide not to wait for instruction, but just act on his own. But we heard the video from the explosives expert last hour, where he talks about what it takes to make the explosives that this kid had on him, which unless you can explain to me where this kid had a lab, or if you can find on his computer the extensive and very detailed and complicated research he would have to know how to do this, unless you can prove through evidence that this Crooks guy actually was the one who built the bomb, we can only assume he got it from somebody else. He got it from somebody with expertise. And again, the top suspect, you're asking, who knows how to make bombs and who has access to bomb material in America? It's the deep state. It's the FBI. It's people like that. And this is what they do. They will provide bombs, and they'll provide real bombs sometimes to prove that they're the real deal, right? So you've got this Patsy guy who's posting something online or is discovered through some sort of psychological profiling that they might be a vulnerable person that can be swayed to do violence. The FBI will get in contact with them and say, oh yeah, we've got this big plot. Or they'll ask them, what do you want to do? Who do you want to take out? How do you want to take them out? And they'll say, you know, I have an explosives guy who can get you a bomb. And they'll actually go, you know, some cabin in the woods where this explosives expert who's, you know, an FBI agent who built the bomb in Quantico and then transported it out to some shed somewhere. And they'll blow something up in the woods and go, see, these are real explosives. These do real damage. To show the Patsy, yeah, this is the real deal. And then they'll give them a fake bomb or a real bomb with a diffuser missing, something along those lines. So the fact that this kid had a bomb in his car, had bomb-making materials in his home, had the detonator on him at the time, doesn't even make sense with what he was doing. I mean, there's no way this guy expected to survive after taking a shot at Trump. He must have known that this would be his last act. So why did he have the detonator? Why did he have the explosive devices if he wasn't going to use them? It doesn't make any sense. What does make sense is perhaps he was provided these things as part of a different fabricated plot by the FBI that never came to fruition because he went rogue and decided to take the shot himself. So whether this was orchestrated on purpose for this end and killing Trump, or whether, you know, there he was led along the path for a while by the FBI and then decided to strike out on his own, this to me is the most reasonable explanation for all of the bizarre inconsistencies and failures and security lapses that led to this event, which I remind you was a miracle that he didn't die, a literal miracle. And again, a miracle in that not only did he survive, but that it allowed the attempt to take place in a way that made it impossible to call it fake, impossible to say it wasn't real. Again, if this guy had just been arrested, you know, while he was still wandering around with the rangefinder, well, the story wouldn't be Trump survives assassination attempt. It would be suspicious character. We probably would never even heard the story, right? It would have been some small town arrest of a guy who may or may not have been suspicious. And apparently, you know, they've looked through his computers, apparently doesn't have anything on there. So if they'd arrested him before he'd fired the shots, they probably would have just let him go and it never would have even been a story. So the fact that it got so close is what allows us to now have the evidence to dig in and to really parse it out and really investigate and maybe determine what actually happened here. Again, if it had gone any other way, we wouldn't have this opportunity. And it's funny because, you know, I was just joking yesterday because I watch a lot of like true crime stuff on YouTube, and one of my favorite people to watch, he's made stuff about Alex Jones before. Like, he covered the Alex Jones trial a little bit, and he's never all that friendly to InfoWars, and, you know, just these, you know, snide little remarks that you hear from people, the whole, like, just how it's dangerous to question things, all this sort of stuff. And yet, it's these people that are now publishing videos going, yeah, something's not adding up. Something's not adding up here. I'm not buying the official story of this assassination attempt, which is good, you know, great. Yeah, you should be questioning everything. But it also annoys me just a little bit that these people who will say, oh, how dare you? How dare you question the official thing? Blackwater found it. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was, we covered that on the first day. I thought it had to do with BlackRock, because we got more BlackRock appearances in this conspiracy, by the way, that we'll get to in just a second. but I posted on X like, oh, so we're all conspiracy theory. Oh, suddenly it's okay, right? Oh, suddenly it's okay to question the official narrative. I mean, people died. Oh, but you're out here questioning the official narrative. I was under the impression that that was, you know, horrible. I was under the impression you should be killed for that. I've heard people say Alex Jones should be hung for what he did, questioning the official narrative of an event. But not anymore, though. Now it's fine. Now it's good. I'm, you know, a little bit being sarcastic because it is fine to question the official narrative. You should be questioning it. It just happens to be the one time that it makes your side look bad that suddenly you're okay with questioning these things. It's a little frustrating, and it's a little bit amateur because you don't actually know how to question things. Like, there, people are so out of practice. They're so used to just chugging lies. They're so used to just believing the mainstream narrative and swallowing in hook, line, and sinker. It's like they don't even know what to look for. They don't know what evidence doesn't add up. They don't know. So they're just saying things are fake with no evidence to back it up and no, you know, things to say. So the assassination attempt was real. Bullets were fired. We saw the whole thing from beginning to end. It happened in a way that it is impossible to have it be faked. Now, just because it wasn't fake doesn't mean it's all exactly as it appears. And this is, I'm trying to, you know, help the our newfound conspiracy theorists out there learn how to do it, because you have to have evidence. You have to have, in many cases, a nuanced view. The question is not, it was either fake or the official narrative is accurate, right? This isn't a black and white thing that says either it was all a hologram and it was all totally fake and Donald Trump put a ketchup packet on his ear to pretend he'd been shot, or this Crooks guy went by himself and grabbed a ladder and climbed up on the roof and shot and nobody'd ever communicated with him and he'd never written anything. And those are your two options. It's one of those. No, it can be both. It can be both. It can be that this guy was the shooter. This guy did fire the rifle. He did act alone at that moment, but that he was in cahoots with other people, that he was trained or directed by people with official positions of power. Just because the attack was real and legitimate and actually could have killed Trump doesn't mean that everything about the official story is true. It just means that it was a real attack and that he really could have died. So I'll show you some more videos, more of what we know. I mean, just more and more information is coming out about this guy, his family, his interactions, as well as people from outside the event who seems to have had foreknowledge. We'll get into the financial transactions around this.
All right, folks. Vitamin Mineral Fusion is finally back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. We just had a shipment come in months ago, and it sold out so fast that we frantically worked to get this back in stock as soon as possible because Vitamin Mineral Fusion is one of our most popular products. Now, the reason that you should be getting this product is for the same reason that you get any other multivitamin product. Our body needs these vitamins, these minerals, and these nutrients in order to live and operate at the most efficient level possible. Now, you should be getting this from InfoWarsStore.com instead of from your pharmacy or your grocery store or with name brands or generic versions, because this has optimal absorption included in it. It's designed for your body to be able to actually absorb all of the nutrients in the most efficient way possible, unlike other competitors on the market that just simply don't operate that way. Now, this includes comprehensive nutritional support. Vitamin Mineral Fusion from InfoWarsStore.com has A, C, D, E, B complex, essential minerals like magnesium, calcium, and zinc. Everything the body needs to survive. It also includes enhanced absorption and utilization. Like I was saying before, this is an advanced multivitamin formulation designed to let your body actually absorb everything so you don't just flush it out like with so many competitors. And finally, it will support energy production and recovery. So make sure you check out Vitamin Mineral Fusion at InfoWarsStore.com right now, not only because this product is an amazing product for anybody in the world to take, but because by purchasing from InfoWarsStore.com, you keep us on the air in this most dangerous time for both InfoWars and our country. We know that freedom of speech is under attack. We know that the New World Order is trying to take over and shut down InfoWars and, frankly, shut you down too. So by getting Vitamin Mineral Fusion at InfoWarsStore.com, not only are you fighting for your health, but you're fighting for your country and you're fighting for humanity itself.